Break into smaller groups, but I think what we're going to do is actually to kick off and at about three, because we don't have any other prompts on the table this afternoon, we just want to have a kind of free-ranging discussion with our two hosts, who I'll introduce you to in a second. But I suggest that we go for about half an hour and then see how we go, and if that seems an appropriate thing to do, we will. And then we're going to break anyway at 4 o'clock. Is that okay with everyone?
Yeah.
And then, so I'm just going to, my only role, because I'm sure you're absolutely sick of hearing my voice, is to introduce our two hosts this afternoon. This table, the future of the art school, has come about, again, for rather obvious reasons, in that it's been floating around, certainly at UAL, for quite a while. Thinking about what our current role is, sometimes it harks back to 68, in terms of, you know, where are we now, 40 years later. But it's obviously around where we are now, post-RE in research culture. And Chris Wainwright, who is a visionary and co-founder of ICFAR and now head of colleges at CCW, former dean of fine art at CSM, Centre for St Martin, is somebody who's, one of his primary concerns has been, what is the future of the art school? And what might it be as a place of social and cultural change? What kind of host might it be in the future to art practice? Peter Jenkinson, on Chris's right, is a cultural broker, some of whom you will know, first National Director of Cultural Partnerships and founder, I think, of Cultural Partnerships, and is working independently with many groups, and it actually sits on many boards of many, many groups around the table as well.
Drawing room.
And so Peter's commitment to both high quality art, social participation, democracy, social change, and the other reason I invited him here, because it felt like this was the next progression, if you like, although progress may not be a word I want to put onto the table at all. And so I invited Chris and Peter to kind of co-host this together, to just put some offers on the table in terms of discussion and debate, and really try for us to discuss that. Because once again, I think certainly for me as director of ICFAR, this is a really important, for all of us here, a really, really important question about what the art school does. To go forward with it and think about its distinctiveness without arguing for its exceptionalism. And I think that really came up this morning as well. And with that, I'm going to pass over, I think, to Chris.
Yes.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for inviting us to come along and talk to you in this fairly slack week of the year where there's not much else going on. Given us plenty of time to prepare. As Claire said, I've spent quite a lot of my art life kind of working in and poking around art schools around both the UK and beyond. So I suppose in a way my experiences are very much formed by a knowledge and a sort of familiarity with the kind of art school as an institution. And that institution varies from place to place, to the extent where sometimes it's quite easy to identify something as an art school, and sometimes it's virtually impossible to identify something as an art school where it's been kind of often swallowed up by a larger institution. So I think we've got some, you know, real discrepancies of understanding about what we mean by art school. And I think probably people in the room who've got different experiences of that not just in the UK but wider. So I think when we say, you know, what is the future for the art school, we have to realise that that's a sort of contingent question, really. Having said that, I think it's useful if we can somehow try to sort of unpick some of those contexts, those institutional, political and economic contexts, and actually start to think about what we might mean by some of the kind of essence of art schoolness that we might agree on, that is something that we feel we might want to assert or reassert or in some cases defend. So you know, I think the kind of position we're going to take is not an absolute position, but one which is very much, you know, related to experiences of everybody here and the contributions that people make from those experiences. I think the thing I wanted to start off with, and first of all, there's a paper here which I'm not going to read, so that'll take too long. I've given that to Chris as an email, and we can post this on a site. So I think if you want to get more detail from this, then you can get it from there. But I will sort of dip into various parts of it. And it's a paper that was triggered really by a number of things which have been happening recently. One is a fairly pointed criticism in the press recently about art schools. And people who sort of read Art Monthly and read The Observer will know what I'm talking about. If you don't,
that's most people,
yeah. Those of you who haven't have probably been protected from some of it. So, you know, I think some of that is well founded as commentaries on what's happening in art education, and some of it's just plain stupid. What I've tried to do is kind of pose a few questions about what the future of the art school might be in terms of questioning some of our assumptions about the relationship between teaching and learning, between tutors and students, and to try to replace some of that rhetoric with a rhetoric which is about communicative learning, and a rhetoric about partnerships and an expanded role for the art schools in terms of how they might see themselves as more integral to a sustainable set of values which exist both within and outside the art school. And I mean, there's nothing new there in one sense, but what I'm asking is there an appetite for change? Is there an appetite for a broader recognition that art schools might actually have a different agenda to that which has been historically determined within the kind of academic imperatives based on fairly outmoded relationships? Mm-hmm. And if I've got any kind of sort of mantra to keep referring to, it's that we shouldn't necessarily be looking for particular sort of answers to problems, because there are many contradictions in art schools, one of which would be, for instance, how we address changing economic and political agendas at the same time as remaining independent. Those two things are often difficult to balance, and I think I certainly learned that if you're going to work in art school, you've got to be comfortable with contradictions. But you know, there's no way that you can hold a particular line throughout the whole of that experience and stay sane. I think, you know, we have to be very kind of nimble in some cases to address one agenda and then be prepared to address a very, very different kind of agenda. And I think actually artists and people in art schools are probably, you know, some of the few people who are equipped to actually do that. Because that's in a way, for me, one of the kind of cruxes of artistic practice is dealing with sort of issues of internal conflict with individual artists and practitioners. So I think, you know, we're quite well placed to deal with contradictions. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'll start from, and I'll populate this text as we go on. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, like Chris, I'm impatient for change, and I think we have a long way to go. All institutions at this moment in the 20th to 21st century need to change. It's not a no-brainer. but I'm completely passionate about the role of culture, creativity, and learning in everyday life. And so it's great to be part of a conversation on the future of the art school. A friend of mine, who some of you will know, Andrew Brewerton, when he started at Dartington, which in itself is an interesting kind of thing to look at in terms of the terrible journey they've been through in recently in trying to maintain independence and so on. He went to China and went to visit a brand new art school that had been opened. And there were troops everywhere with guns. And he said, well, great location, great buildings, but why the troops? And they said, that's because we're interviewing for our next intake of students. 30,000 art students in that school. And one of 60 art schools being built across China. And he came back and said, we're fucked. you know, so an absolute we may as well give up now. You know, it's not just industrialising the production of everything that we buy, it's also industrialising the production of artists. So what do we do about that? Move to China? And what are those students going to be doing? And very, very interesting. It'll be the same in India and so on. And the whole idea, because these things have to be looked at in global context, of us being the knowledge factories of the world in Europe, and the rest of the southern hemisphere will do the industrial production, is just not going to happen. And we know Bangalore is a major centre for IT and creative industries, and across the southern hemisphere it's going to be the same. So what does a European art school do? Is an interesting question. And clearly we've got a large number, we're just talking about demographics in the colleges here at the moment. It is predominantly female and middle class and international. And that hasn't shifted remarkably, even by 2008. So what do we do? I did have the privilege of setting up this thing that Claire mentioned called Creative Partnerships. It's two cliches in one title. It's like, I'm so glad I was explaining what I mean by creativity to 400 grumpy head teachers and other annual conference and partnership. But it was the UK government response to the international question about how we transform our education systems best to meet the 21st century. I was very much inspired by a thinker, Sir Ken Robinson, who of course knows very well, and some of you will know, who was at the University of Warwick. And he concluded, to our international guests, I went very long in the UK, but he concluded that creativity has to be written into the core script of learning. That our education systems that we are still living in today are 19th century inheritances, where 90% of the students are taught to be the workers and 10% the management. And this was totally inappropriate for 21st century needs. It is the same conclusion that many countries around the world are looking at this, Hong Kong, Singapore, Canada, Australia, have come up, and Greece actually, and there's very interesting things happening in Greece around this particular primary level. But we got it wrong, we've got to start again. So we want learning, not education. And this is where the art school comes in, because if we are to have this delicious confusion and this delicious contradiction, we revel in it, that is where we need to be. But we've got our education systems that's funneling people into ever narrower pools, which is just wrong. It's rather than opening people up, we're closing them down. And a great majority of people leave school feeling complete failures, and they feel that failure for the rest of their lives. And it comes out in so many costs. The art school can be somewhere truly experimental, adventurous, risk-taking, innovative. You're nodding, aren't you, Claire? This is what you think the art school is. It has to be like that, of laboratories of experimentation and of danger. And all too often, we aim low and we succeed, rather than aiming high and failing. And our managements of our art schools were telling us to do the former, to aim low and succeed. How dull is that? How boring. It's what artists do all the time, is to aim high and sometimes fail, and that's our experience. I've had the pleasure of working in art galleries and with art and artists for 20 years now, and it never fails to amaze me. what artists do and the way they think, the way they contribute to conversations in unimaginable ways and unpredictable ways, unknown outcomes. So I think we should close all our schools now and start again.
Is that the proposition?
Or we have our schools with 35,000 students now.
Oh, thank you both for that. I mean, I'm not really going to chair this afternoon. I'm going to kind of leave that to Chris and Peter. But in terms of thinking about how that responds to this morning, I think it's very interesting because we talked so much about different kinds of cultural spaces that artists occupy, and the different words that we're using, some of them which now feel historically inappropriate to us, to determine what those words are, and that we hark back to nostalgic and reflective ideas about the art schools and the place that the artist practice might be, at the same time as we still desire to have that.
We're all thinking about Bauhaus as well.
Yes, and we talked a little bit more about Bauhaus this morning as well, and actually the specific nature of certain art schools might be interesting things to discuss this afternoon too. Two friends from Greece, Espen and Lisa, were both at Maidstone in the early 60s, which was a very experimental art school at the time. Everybody's got their own experience of education to match on the one that we also have as researchers and teachers. And here we are. I keep saying, we ended the morning with Jane saying, "Who are we?" Jane Lee saying, "Who are we?" When I very facetiously said, "Well, you know, there are no grown-ups anymore. We are them. Let's just do what we like." but we don't seem able to do that.
We wish.
Or to know what we like. So I think that's kind of the beginning point for discussion, really, about the future of the art school, and particularly, of course, in relationship to that word that Jan criticised this morning, research.
I kind of add something to that in terms of an imperative as well. I think. Did you use the word delicious a few minutes ago?
I did.
You did, right. I thought you did.
It felt the right thing.
I mean, it is actually delicious to sit and theorise about art education. You know,
yes.
We could do it all day. And I think, you know, there's a real kind of culture of doing that. And I'd hate us to perpetuate that. because I think, you know, we just all sit here and, you know, have a very kind of articulate conversation and nothing would happen. That's what usually happens. I mean, I think there's actually an imperative to propose some changes and propose some very, very specific ideas which can be shot down in flames or they can be populated, whichever predilection people have. I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't close the art school down, but I'd probably really start to think about what we could do that's different. And if I can just start with giving some examples of some current thinking. I mean, the people around here will probably be familiar with what I'm talking about with the developments we're doing at Camberwell, Chelsea and Wimbledon, which is to create a graduate school in the university for those three colleges. And before anybody asks where it is, it doesn't exist. It never will exist other than within a kind of virtual sense, because we don't have the bricks and mortar to make it realisable as a physical entity. In a sense, I'm not sure, even if we did, that's the way we'd do it anyway. I think what we've tried to scope and tried to develop is the notion of a graduate school that attempts quite specifically to put together postgraduate education in art and design and research in art and design as a single community, as a way of trying to get some kind of cyclical process of benefiting from research initiatives that feed back into the learning experience of postgraduate students and so on, and ensuring some kind of continuity of people wanting to address a kind of series of research agendas. So that's the constituency, if you like, which is taught postgraduate MA courses, research degrees, and the work of researchers, research centres, and so on. And you know that will be the way it's populated, and people will move through those within a number of ways: seminars, through supervision, through workshops, through life projects, and so on, and partnerships. That's the kind of model, if you like, for the school. The more important issue is that we're looking quite specifically at setting that graduate school up on the basis of taking on board a series of what we think are crucial lines of inquiry. regardless of what subject disciplines people are working in. Each year we will say, what are the really, really important issues that art school should be addressing through a very, very mature set of practitioners, and by that, you know, postgraduate level in research, so that we can actually make a difference as a collective community of thinkers and makers to some of those key lines of inquiry, some of the key issues. And to start the year with a conference, to start the year with a set of propositions which might be provocative, which might be, you know, difficult, or there might be issues that people universally think are absolutely crucial. And that will sustain those programmes for the rest of that year, regardless of subject disciplines. And in a way, it's my way of kind of finally putting a nail in the coffin of interdisciplinarity, which I think has been the death of art school, but actually creating strong disciplines where people could have a real meaningful discourse with other disciplines, and not somehow trying to push the edges and create a kind of multilingual art education, which is no good for anybody. So, you know, I think that's it's a provocation. I'd be quite interested to see if people feel they'd like to populate something like that, or if they feel that's going against the grain of what people expect art school to be. So that's my first proposition, provocation.
Can I just say, this might be a provocation as well, that I don't find either of those propositions radical. I mean, your proposition was written up by Paul Goodman, the sociologist in Magaconcord Province in 1963. And in fact, to argue out from that, the 35,000 people that are fucking us, you know, I mean, he would have said, Paul Goodman would have thought, well, yeah, that's the next step. I mean, you know, the school, all schools disappear,
yeah.
And that they
yes.
become the society.
Yes.
So that's one position, which I think, because it's kind of a classic kind of post-Marxist critical of Marxism, Althusserian statement, it's in a sense classic and traditional already, in a sense. And the other one is really, you know, robust, energetic, but within a long-standing university tradition, and it's, you know, it's taking responsibility for the kind of fundamentals of the university in epistemology, for instance, that you put forward. But I mean, neither of those positions is particularly radical. They're both positions which have been held for a long time, since the 60s at least. I mean, I'm saying that because that's what I remember too. You know, presumably before that, I mean, there are things in what Chris is talking about that were already there in Bologna in the mid 12th century. Mm. But I just, you know, I mean, when you say you both want change, well, yeah, but you don't have to want change. I mean, change is always there. You're never in a position where you're not changing. Mm. I mean, so what is it we want? Mm. You know, I mean, what is it that we want? I mean, what do we want to influence change? Enjoy change? Suffer change? What do we want? Themselves as responsible art and design, whatever. What is this
notion of the art.
Can I say something about this? Was my term for this was art school model, partly for this session, partly because I wanted to kind of get at the idea of whether there is something distinctive or specific about the model, if you like, and whether something of a kind of tongue-in-cheek attitude towards art school model. But also the terminology, and we sort of talked about that this morning as well, does bring up things like history of curricula, which, you know, is so important. The notion of where we call schools, like School of the Art Institute in Chicago, or the way that the American system perceives itself, the relationship between school, college and university rather differently. I mean, it seems that those are at the centre of cultural debate, the terms that we've used in the past few years. But Malcolm?
Well, to be radical for a minute, I mean, somebody disparaged the 19th century, but in fact, I see the early 19th century and the birth of the art school in this country as being very radical. Particularly the government-sponsored reading of Capital that founded the art school in Britain, which we've never quite...
Tell us about that. I mean, everybody might not know about that.
Well, the Select Committee of Arts and Manufactures of 1835 was a government select committee which basically got frontline reports from the Industrial Revolution, from John Martin, for a start, from artisans, from all kinds of people, as to what the conditions were like out there, particularly in relation to intellectual property, identity, sense of self. And it's good old early 19th century empirical positivist stuff, but it was quite a bloody radical thing to do. Mm. And if I had my way, I'd do that committee again.
Yes. Mm.
For post-industrial input.
Mm.
And that would be a good way to kickstart the art school.
Hit Rebecca and then Mariana, because I'm just seeing Rebecca.
I just think so, I wondered whether there was some kind of conflict between the notion of learning and art, or whether, you know, what that relationship between learning and art is. Because on the shop floor when you're teaching, something that comes up again and again is, you know, you could do good research but crap art.
Mm.
So what is that? What is that relationship between learning and art? And is that something that is
question of tutelage, you know, that how do we, if we take down the halls of the art school, which you know stand for the protection of the student by the master, what form does the tutelage take? Well, we have loads of sociologists telling us how that can work. I mean, particularly in the 60s, and, you know, and I think there are some really fundamental questions about learning, about knowledge, about what we consider knowledge to be, about what, you know, we have to ask ourselves again who we are and what we're doing, because that's where it's coming from. And I agree entirely that, you know, we have to start in a different position if we want to be able to make some different questions, I think.
Because when you hear about Malcolm coming, you're still looking at the modern position.
Yes,
it seems
exactly.
Very sad.
And it's great that you recognise it as British empiricist thinking. So often English people don't know they have a philosophy. But I mean, you know, now to be bringing forward a British empiricist thing in even when all our students have just learned French critique, German post-structuralism, you know, they're going to be asking the questions first. You know, so there are some really key issues that we need to tease out first.
Can I just come back to something more specific to what Chris was talking about? Because your concept of thematic inquiry, I'm quite interested in. Whether it's the process of thematic inquiry itself, or whether you feel there's a fundamental set of criteria about how that thematic inquiry comes to be the one pursued. Or you see what I mean? How prescriptive, how democratic, how, you know, like in which way does the importance of thematic inquiry, how is that perceived? Is it in terms of the content itself or of the process of inquiry itself?
Well, the kind of democratic answer to that is you would negotiate content through consensus, or you would get the opposite to that, which would be some assertion from the institution. as to what that should be, mass inquiry should be, and to then draw people into a sort of, you know, the populating of that through agreement.
I'm interested because we were talking this morning about agency behind exhibition. We were talking about, and so I think throughout the day there has been this almost like avoidance of the notion of agency and of the taking of a position. And I think, you know, maybe we should actually be a bit more honest about wanting to take positions.
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, again, I'm just whispering to Peter, we've become delicious already. This is degenerating to a beautiful discussion yet again, which I find depressing, actually.
Oh, gosh.
No, I do. I think we're not addressing the real issues. I think we're sort of reconstituting kind of historical positions, and I can't see where that's going to take us.
Are you talking pragmatically?
I'm talking pragmatically. That's why I'm proposing certain kind of issues. You know, My question was, would people want to populate the kind of art school that we're outlining? Yes or no?
But in a sense, if I were to host, it'd be nice. In a sense, pragmatics itself is a philosophical position, and it's one that one could see as emptier or fuller, in a sense.
Yeah.
It might be perceived to be rather empty, perhaps, if one were putting a really provocative position on the table, because it makes all kinds of assumptions about the necessity, the imperative for pragmatism in the face of something, we don't know what. I mean, what we're, I think, trying to think about is whether we might draw out specific questions about the kinds of learning and research that take place in art schools that we might move on from. I mean, in a sense, we've got an open
model. That's what I was trying to say, really. I think, you know, there's a number of ways we can look at it. Should we be saying, you know, it's our role and responsibility to determine what are the key issues that art and design education should be dealing with, you know, and if we have some consensus around that, could that form the basis for a kind of sophisticated inquiry of postgraduate research level?
Isn't what you're talking about is curriculum then, aren't you? You're talking about a curriculum for the art school, and that perhaps bemoaning the time when there was one, and in a sense the curriculum now is all placed around the student, in a sense. It's driven by the student's own concerns and interests to an extent. The course, the framework, the curriculum frames that way in which the student moves through the 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is. And I think that in England anyway, compared to Germany and possibly other countries, we as tutors tend to sort of step back slightly. We don't put ourselves up in the front and say who we are and what we subscribe to.
Not the Italians.
I mean, what tends to happen, of course, is the students go straight to Google and they'll find out who their tutors are and what they're about, and they'll make up their own minds that way. But we don't put that up front. We don't write it in the prospectus. We step back and we say, no, this is your course. We'll help you do what you want to do. I know I'm simplifying, but in a sense, That's what we tend to do, and I think there is, and not only do we do that, but we create a sort of structure, which tends to be a kind of one size fits all structure and system. We stick with this sort of 10-week terms, you know, so you're like a school kid still. You have term times and holidays, and that you'll see your tutor every 2 weeks, and you'll go to your school. And why do we do that? Why do we kind of persist with that kind of structure and system, which does in itself have a whole set of ideas and ideologies connected to it, which you know, build on early education and so on, which, as you pointed out, is missing,
working.
You know, and it's not working.
Because I think that, you know, you talk about, like, you know, the art school needs to kind of explode, something new will come out of it. Actually, I think New Statham needs to implode. And that sounds really weird, but I think that there's this huge gap, and authority is a really big thing in art school. And there's a really big gap between your tutors and you in this weird way. And I think, like you're saying, the tutors step back and they go, this is your thing, there's a structure, there's these boxes, everything's sorted out for you, you're not allowed in this time, you're allowed like this. So I think that if that gap became a lot closer, and instead of talking about the students and what we're doing, they're like, bring them here, like, you know, talk to them about it. That point of the way around and really including it, because it's like, because otherwise that gap is still there, and it is really frustrating hearing about it from, you know, that that point of view that these drastic things have changed, but actually it's more interesting to go inside.
In Jane's question earlier, students, you feel very much like you.
You are, yeah.
And we feel very much like us, and we don't feel like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really nothing. So it's kind of like you get your hour every 2 weeks, yeah, and then if you're on the same level of life, okay, that's kind of it. And but if I bump into you in Tesco, it's suddenly, oh, yeah, we're not, yeah, well, no, it doesn't kind of work like that. And that, for me, is very, very difficult because surely we are the future you. I mean, that's kind of like a bit of a new, you know, a bit of a headline or something like that. But, it's kind of like, I mean, maybe it's the
same. I think this is what I mean about tutelage being a really important place to start. Tutelage means protection, in a sense, and, you know, so that we're protecting you. But I think the key thing that worries me about this is that we're acting as if it's either the university or the student that makes the thing, and as if it's floating somewhere, the art school, out of the world. And, and I mean, you know, what about the third position where actually the world is making is
yeah.
some demands?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and both, you know, we're, yeah, you and I are in the same world. I mean, that's how we get together, you know. I mean, yeah, I'm sort of 4 years older or something than you, so we're not going to like the same music, but we're in the same world.
We're all
sure.
We don't want to like jam or anything.
No. But the thing is that the. To go back to the 60s, you know, the art school without walls is an idea that, you know, it's always there.
Mm.
I mean, we're not isolated, we shouldn't be isolated from the world. And any isolation that we feel is of our own making and is probably bred of fear. And I think that, you know, the tutors should be helping students to overcome fear of the world and to work in the world. You know, it should be we should be together as artists, you know, the older and younger artists in the world. But I think we have to stop thinking just in. I mean, this is where I know what you mean, Chris, that you get fed up with everybody going right back to the drawing board the moment you open your mouth. But I do think that, you know, when we start to put these very specific things into place, you know, we're again building systems that act as if we're an enclosed system of our own, and we haven't taken into account our next door neighbour, which is going to be the London Sinfonietta, for instance. I mean, why aren't they running the curriculum?
I agree with you. I think if, you know, if you start to kind of develop a model, you know, if you do talk about, I mean, Mark called it curriculum, I think that's probably an interesting place to start and build from there.
Mm.
And if you create a series of imperatives, which we would say these are important issues for art schools. They might also be important issues for politicians, they might be important issues for science, for medicine, and so on and so on. So you then start to have different relationships both within and outside the art school. And I think that's the agenda that we're not necessarily exploiting enough at the moment in terms of creating something sustainable. I think, you know, there's any number of short-term or time-limited initiatives that we could all kind of cite as being interesting collaborations outside of the art school, but they're not sustainable.
Yeah.
And I think my concern is that we need to embed some significant and some sustainable relationships for the art school. And that's why, for me, defining the art school is important, because it then defines who you are in terms of who you then relate to.
And if we helicoptered up above the UK for a short while, and look back down again, it's extraordinary the change that we've gone through, not least culturally, in the last 10 to 20 years. And more artists in this country than ever before, famously the highest concentration of artists in Europe, in East London, although they're losing their studios by the week, not least because of the Olympic effect. It's like irony what we'll wake up in 2013 and they're gone.
Yeah.
Politicians like to claim that this is the world's creative hub, London. The most diverse city in the world, the next is Toronto, and then in the UK, more and more people involved in creativity as a job and not just as a hobby. How has this happened, and is this, has the art school done this? What role has the art school played in this enormous, amazing change?
Yeah.
We've taken more than 5 million visitors a year, the most popular gallery in the world. Unpleasant in there a lot of the time because you can't move and you can't see the art. And they themselves, Tate's are going through as they double in size by 2012, and an extraordinarily complex, rich conversation about these issues as well. Should Tate Modern be an art school in its own right? Is it a university for all? They're saying yes. I'll answer that question very briefly. So how did we get to this moment? And has the art school played a role in that, or has it not? If you talk to some of the people who set up the British advertising industry in the 50s, a lot of them were working class kids, and they went to Hornsey College of Art on a Saturday morning for a free art class. And they talk now about how influential that was, you know, travelling out of the East End up to Hornsey for this. So there are some very strange things that happen through art schools. It may not mean that you end up being an artist, but you will actually be playing a role in the shift.
Yeah.
But are art schools doing enough? And I'm very interested in the issue of collaboration with a friend who has put together the Royal College of Art and the London School of Economics for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he's got the rapid prototyping people from the RCA just to help rapid thinking at the LSE. And they're two disciplines that wouldn't normally meet, but it's fascinating what has come out as a result. So this issue of, I would say, make friends with strange people, and something quite unexpected will happen. That for me is why art school should be, and all institutions should be outward facing, but from a position of strength, as Chris said, of absolutely honed discipline and focus.
Mm.
Liz.
Yeah, I don't want to come across as sort of the pedant of the art of who, but I think there's a...
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Also, first of all, I never work in an art school. I work in a family of arts, so maybe I've got a different investment in this.
But is that the art school model?
The faculty of arts is the circuit, like a shading frame, if you like. I think there's a slipping here between the school of regulatory framework, as Mark's just described, and school of thought, which I think is probably much more important, but which is in danger of being eroded by the imposed regulatory framework.
Mm.
And it seems to me that if we're going to move from here, not in a radical exploding way, but in the more pragmatic step-by-step way, probably the first thing to do is to sit and think about our own institution, our own sense of identity, and what is the school of thought that characterises us, because in the end, the influential place would be places like Blackmountain College and so on, the places that actually knew what they were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the trouble, in a way, is that we all keep on taking on each other's models, modular systems, and going to competition with each other by trying to want more of the same, rather than actually articulating differences that characterise us more specifically.
I don't know if you've ever seen the South Park episode where the Nathan government bans imagination. and it's fantastic. And it's in response to 9/11. They go, well, somebody imagined this. So we're going to have to stop it right now. And so it's a brilliant episode. Imagine a world without imagination. Imagine a world without thought.
Yeah.
Schools of thought is brilliant.
Actually, in reality, the opposite's happening. I think I was at a discussion a couple of weeks ago in Chicago with some people from the art school there, saying that one of the biggest threats to art schools is the fact that the term creativity has been stolen from creative people and is being used ferociously in the kind of corporate and financial sectors. Mm-hmm. You know, you've now got Shell and BP saying we are creative.
Yeah.
You've got law firms saying we're creative. You've even got, you know,
Accountants.
The kind of rhetoric, the kind of phraseology associated with our core disciplines have now become kind of open source material.
Yeah.
And I think that's given us a kind of crisis of identity in terms of not any longer having an exclusive or a sort of, you know, a perceived uses of a language which we feel comfortable with, because everyone else seems to be using it at the same time.
Linking in with that, if we think about kind of what made kind of British art school very exciting in the first half of the century, 20th century, was the welfare state.
The second half, just after the post-war.
And that really kind of did something great, didn't it? And there was an ideology there that kind of drove that, which was for the good of the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the sake of education and to give access to people who didn't have it before. And, you know, that worked great. And maybe we should have Linda Morris here, because she knows so much about British art education, the history of it. What would have happened, and I don't, but I do know that there was a big battle between Victor Padmore and William Coldstream. And what would have happened if Coldstream would have won instead of Victor Padmore? So maybe we would have had painting and language.
He did win.
I was under the impression that he hadn't won.
No, he did.
What about paint? Well, all right. So,
tell me the first name of Coldstream.
William. Okay, I'm going to get kind of minuted as making a major boot.
Who's judging?
But in a sense, this is one of the things that you're saying, Pam, and I'll let you continue a minute. And the thing that I'm very interested in getting to, really, is, and perhaps I'm wrong, I didn't go to art school, I did a literature degree, but it always seemed to me that, but I've taught in art schools, partly because I've always taught in art schools, partly because the art school model of education felt so different to me, because it's a place which allows thought to happen in a profoundly different way. I mean, I'm always talking about the idea, which isn't mine at all, but very much Mika Bahl's idea, that art thinks, and how art thinks is what takes place in art school. And art might think in the body, for instance, in a very profoundly different way from the way that we think on a page. And so art schools expand the notion for me of what kind of thinking can take place and how exchange can happen. Now, I'm really interested in the fact that the discussion immediately, and actually right beginning with Chris, suggested that there's a terrible crisis. Unless we respond to that imperative, we kind of can't go on. Whereas I'm wondering whether the crisis is about actually recognising the specificity of the art school model and looking at how enormously generative it's been throughout our culture and trying to re-recognise it in terms of where we go now in the postgraduate landscape. I'm not at all sure myself, it's part of my own in the thematic notion of postgraduate education. I'm not at all sure about the attack on interdisciplinarity, but I am really sure that postgraduate is where it's taking place.
Well, I think the danger of Coldstream, who did win, was that in a way he rendered the whole business of being in an art school rather scholastic.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Because you had these core disciplines.
He rendered it scholastic.
Scholastic. You had these core disciplines.
Yeah.
Surrounded by this interdisciplinary weak
complementary bond of
complementary studies. And really, for me, that was the reverse polarity of what happened in the early 19th century.
Yeah.
That radical openness to the world and its goods and its stuff and its terrors suddenly got turned into this really rather weird situation.
Yes.
Well, I think arguably, I made reference to Coldstream here actually, I think arguably most art schools are still predicated on the Coldstream system.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think actually very little has changed, regardless
of
what we think. You know, how many art schools still run the sort of 80-20% practice and theory, you know, without even thinking about why they're doing it?
Yeah.
You know, very, very few people realise that goes back to Coldstream. It just seems to be part of the culture, and that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are pockets of, you know, changes to that, and where there are those changes, they're actually changes for the better.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have an incredibly conservative 1950s approach to art school.
Just one line to follow up my
today. Just one.
the women's movement, that kind of, which was perhaps the most recent kind of radicalisation of art practices in British art colleges,
mm-hmm.
American art colleges.
that kind of got fed into kind of that existing system still, didn't it? It had to try to kind of find a space for itself in it. And that's, I think that's kind of, that's where we are now, really, with a system that with a new constituency of kind of practitioners and groups who are kind of we, as a, you know, that came out of kind of, you know, gender politics, etc., construction, within kind of a very kind of a moribund museum.
I'd just like to clarify something here a minute, because we're talking about art schools, art colleges, art faculties. These places, the places we, a lot of us belong to, of course, incorporate many different subject disciplines, design, media, dance, performance, you know, there's lots of things. I have a feeling, and from the way in which people introduce themselves, is that most people in this room are allied very closely to fine art practice in one way or another, or history, theory that often is perhaps contingent on fine art practice. And of course, one of the questions that is often asked is, what's the place of fine art within an art school? Because in many ways, design departments have a very easy relationship with industry, and the oil wheels are being oiled by all sorts of finance deals with corporations and so on. Fine art finds that more difficult, quite obviously, and so the whole knowledge transfer world is one that we're not kind of nearly so confident in being able to navigate. And so is what we're talking about fine art, really? Or are we talking about the whole of fine art and design at all?
I'm talking about all of it, but with a focus on where I think some of the most interesting thinking might come from, which is from the sector you've outlined. Well, I think it's interesting looking at the sort of position most design schools are in now, particularly when they're addressing areas of sustainability, climate, recycling, and so on and so on. They're no longer actually providing a sort of non-complicated labour force for the design industries. They're actually questioning the very basis of some of those design industry efforts. I think they've put themselves, quite rightly, in quite an uncomfortable relationship with potential employers, because you know, they're saying, well, actually, no, you shouldn't be doing that. And we are now telling you as you know, informed, critical, responsible designers that your company policy is crap, and we want to change it. I think that's a really interesting development. It's something that is closer in many ways to the way we've conventionally thought as artists. I think because of that, within the sort of fine art or related constituency of the art school, I don't think we can assume that we're any different to some of the design and some of the applied arts sectors, who are actually catching us up and overtaking us in terms of their engagement with their constituency in a critical way that is about changing that constituency. So, you know, I think it's moving closer than that perceived relationship of it's not a problem for designers because they get jobs. They're actually doing themselves out of jobs.
One of the key places that started was Art Centre Pasadena, and 70% of the world's cars are designed there. And you go in the car park, it's full of Porsches and Audi TTs, and that's the students. But Richard Koshelek, who runs it, who's one of the few cultural figures who goes to Davos each year, where there isn't a conversation about culture or creativity at Davos. Political leaders aren't interested in it, bizarrely. But he did it precisely that, and he had big corporations coming to him that would whack hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this and that and the others. They started saying, no, we're not interested in doing that anymore, and actually to put it the other way around. So to take up a very ethical position for the college, because we realised the college is actually contributing to the world's problems rather than solving them, and that design should be seen in a context of changing the world for the better, as it, you know, back to Bauhaus and so on.
That's why, you know, you might say within that context of discourse that, a graduate school could base itself on a process of ethical inquiry, and define what those might be in terms of those global issues.
I'd be really interested to hear from other people who've had different kind of art school experiences as well, in terms of kind of it seems to me that there is a kind of issue of recognition, if you like, and we don't have such a problem of recognition around curatorial practice or studio practice. We do, I feel, have a problem with recognising, if you like, what's happening in the art school, and particularly coming into a research environment, we're very unsure about what research might be in the art school. But I'm looking straight at Lida there, because we've talked over many years about the experience of coming, for instance, to a British art school in the 60s, and I'm quite interested in, of course, that's a particularly loaded historical moment in a sense, but it's also kind of very important moment in thinking about slightly from coming into it and looking back at it now, Lida, on what that experience of British art school is about.
Okay. There are two things. One has to do with it's sort of historical. I will answer the word it's like then, but I think the other thing has to do with the fact that, you know, that's very important to me. I can see an underlying feeling of depression here. And it's very obvious, and I'm very unhappy about it. I mean, I'm sorry it is this way, because somehow there's a relevance between what was going on in the 60s and what's going on now.
Yes.
In both cases,
yes,
they have been economically and politically unsettled times. One was right after the Second World War. Now we're in the middle of, I assume, the Third World War. It is played in a very different sense. The business of recognition is also still very important and very up to date, because being recognized by one's name, it is still a problem, both within one's own country, as a member of the international sort of setup, okay? That all has to do with where you come from, where you studied, what your credentials are. I think that I taught myself for 4 years only, and the reason it was only 4 years was because I could not cope with it. I could not cope with the difficulty of having to take decisions daily that are very similar to the decisions politicians take. You know, one has to be extremely careful, and one is always in danger of being kicked out of one's party, so to speak, because it happens all the time. Okay? So this business of being either with one party or the other is something that I really abhor, and I will always vote against it. It is as much part of the art system as it is, of course, of the larger system that art belongs to. It was very important in the 60s for me, and I'm very grateful I came to England. To start with, I'm grateful to myself for making that decision. I have no reason whatsoever. I hardly spoke the other language, I didn't speak any other language. It just happened that the country, my country, was on the verge of going into fascism, dictatorship, and one to feel it in there. So I came here to study, and it was fantastic, because I had never seen live art before. I had never been in a museum. I didn't know what paintings looked like. There was no museum in Greece at the time, no different than the National Museum. And there were only two galleries. So you can just about imagine the impact that living art had on me and any other person who came from a similar country. My good colleague Destiny came to the same college in Maidstone 4 years before I did. So part of my preoccupation always as a very short-lived teacher was to support and protect. And you used this word very nicely, and I'm sure you did not mean to protect from evil. It is protect from what they want, actually. Because yes, I mean, we all know this work of art. Protect from what they want. Yes, it's very yes, okay. And by that I mean that what young people, I mean students, because normally students are young. I don't want to make it sexist in any way, age, right? What young people want, it has to do with what they're what their main belief is they ought to wish for. You know, they want, and many of the schools, universities or outcomes or whatever, they prepare people with regular expectations. That's why the final, say the big shows at the end, the big diploma shows are always the market is there and then, you know, like you gotta be moving and pick up and promote students. This is very important. And this is something I would protect my students from if I could do it. As it is, I'm not I use my political thesis in my work because I can do a much better job doing that than I could do as a student. It's a very sensitive issue, and I think in a way you are all right, every single one of you, from all three who have talked today, you have said something which is relevant, and I can also understand the difficulty of actually drawing a shape and saying this is the shape I want. Because, of course, before you say that, you have to know precisely what you want. But before that, you have to have the guts and go ahead, simply knowing what you want. Mm-hmm. So it's that basic wish that is the life-giving force.
No, I think, I mentioned before when I was speaking and I said something about Constant talking about desire. I mean, it felt wrong, but I think now, in what you say, it's this business of how do you create. I mean, what Constant said was that, I mean, he was criticizing the Marxist position of his own day in 1948, and he was saying that it's all right to say that our desires create the revolution, that the desires of the proletariat create the revolution, but if the proletariat has been repressed for all these centuries, how can it have any desires? You know, first
well,
we
it's
have
not
to
the proletariat anymore, is it?
No, it's not proletariat. Okay, but it's a similar thing. It's the business of, you know, when you took the word tutelage as I was using it and turned it to Barbara Kruger's text of, you know, don't protect yourself from what you want. I can understand that when you say the student is looking for something that they have been trained to look for, and mm-hmm. they must first of all open up this area, which Constant called an area of play, and you know, it's a kind of basic situationism really. And I think that's what's taken over. That's the theoretical thing that lay behind the problematic position that, you know, we seem to have got into, where the student is playing, and you know, this kind of inspired play is the model of what they're supposed to be doing in the studio, and then we don't really know where our tuition is meant to come into it. It came from a good place. I mean, you know, it came from a good intention, is what I want to say. It came from an intention to give the space to, you know, the proletariat, which I would say the student always is, the proletariat, the chance to create their own desires, which would then remake the world, you know. But I mean, the problem then, as you say, is that you then, this area of play has to somehow be activated and made that situation, and that, in a sense, is done by limitation, by authority. And we're always in this dialectical situation.
But doesn't that come back to what Chris was saying about, or my attempt to make him say that he was going to be a bit of a dictator, that there was going to be the imposition, of some form of boundary against which to work.
Let's not use the word dictator. I mean,
oh, sorry, that's and I don't mean you. I just mean that the art school will not be a place where everything is unstructured and nothing has any tension against which to play, because I mean, I think the most creative activities come when one has some form of agenda against which either to support or react against. I mean, I think that...
You should have those boundaries. Yeah. I mean, then you can get something exciting happening in the
But in contribution, really, if there's not so much that, you know, the boundary in a sense is a contribution to the thing that's going on. It's not a negative but a positive thing. Mm.
But in a
it's
sense...
A game with rules. All the games you play, in a certain sense, have rules. And as long as the rules are agreed and you all understand them, all manner of things can happen within that space.
But what that's making me realise, in a sense, is that very problematically, all of that's true, and artists are always setting themselves up for rules in order to create the kind of resistances and rationales. But it suddenly seems to me very clear from what we're saying that, certainly in British society, the art school has probably always occupied an anomalous curriculum position. So that all of these words, like curriculum, for instance, or discipline in themselves, as people like Peter Burke, I've done a huge amount of work on, are, you know, are historical formations. The art school has an irritant relationship to those. And it's been asked now to be at the spearhead of a particular kind of research culture. And I don't think it's depressing in any way, but I do think that it's really important to understand the art school model. Because otherwise, we can't simply... We can't simply move into a different notion.
Well, and then you derive the investigation from the specifics of the model rather than deriving an investigation from elsewhere.
Yeah.
And
yes,
to climb on my hobby horse again for a second, the original investigation was the investigation of this sudden change from quasi-feudal society to industrial capital. That was the first bit of research that was initiated vis-a-vis the art school.
Yes.
And in some ways that's where I think we should try and return.
Well, also, can I just say that when 1835, if they did that in 1835, there was no old-style British empiricism about it. I mean, statistics, censuses had first started in 1790s. So in a funny way,
it was a high point of utilitarianism.
So that's kind of that's interesting in itself.
1830s is just a high point of empiricism.
Yeah, well,
a
very
positive moment.
But still young.
Yeah, very young.
Still very young.
A radical philosophy in itself.
Yeah, radical philosophy in itself. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And so in a sense, hasn't the art school always been part of that, an empiricist idea? It's combined ideas about technical knowledge and what technique is in itself and other kinds of knowledge. And isn't it important for us to try and understand that in terms of where we go next?
Yeah.
I think that's necessary to have a confident voice in the kinds of agendas which we're now being asked to address, which are externally set, but they're not externally set in the sense of being inappropriate. I think there are many external agendas which we should be saying this ought to be sort of the core business of our schools involved with. You know, debates on sustainability, debates on climate change, debates on terrorism, debates on faith, you know.
Yeah.
We can't just sit and ignore those.
They become inappropriate,
Chris.
They become inappropriate as those words load themselves through spaces, through social and cultural spaces. So they start off as appropriate, and as they move, they become less appropriate. Something I've kind of been thinking about today a lot when Jan Kapoor was talking this morning about the word research, for instance. So I don't think they're always appropriate.
But isn't it art's role to kind of problematise those debates then?
Well, it was agitprop's role in the 30s and then the 60s to take on issues. I'm quite concerned about that idea. Other people are provocative. Is it? I mean, are we saying we want art school to be issue based? We want to take on climate change terrorism.
You might say, you know, that the human race is at war with the planet, therefore we should do something about it.
And we used to say in the 70s that we all need National Health Service glasses before we need art schools.
But I think it's art school's role to problematise that debate.
Okay, then how do we do it? Then what's the methodology? How does art think in terms of the art school model?
Well, that's why I think you might set up some discourses that aren't just about having that discourse within the art school.
Yeah, and so then we want to have that discourse with other kinds of classes.
Absolutely, and that will be the basis for
and is that our hosting, if you like? Is that our strong hosting?
I think we should take responsibility.
Aren't you hardening on some very tough ground there?
Yeah.
Just thinking of Oxford University, it has research centres in all those areas. It has the Research Centre for the Future of Humanity.
Mm.
How do you...
I think you've got to have that discussion, you've got to have that debate with them.
But what are the terms, and this is what the thing, my concern with art school model is, It's like what happens to terms as they move, as they get more and more mobile socially, and how are they debated? So do we, for instance, one of my experiences I had as an editor for many years was that every essay that I received for many years would quote Deleuze and Guattari. It stopped happening now, but they would always begin with Deleuze and Guattari. No, they quote Rancière now.
Oh.
It's
yeah.
a different thing.
And Badia.
And Badia. They're the mot de jour. Anyway, they would always quote Deleuze and Guattari. So, and the reason I did it is because it gives you freight as you try to move into a scholastic environment. So I'm concerned that with that idea of issues, that they that it gives us, it's they're assumed in order to give a kind of freight, along with Oxford and Cambridge and Cornell and Harvard and everyone. But do they really? Is there something else in the art school model that we should be... In Greek, there's a different one. In, if you like, gnorizo is a different word from recognize. It's a tougher, more specific word. But it's about that. It's about the re-seeing of what we're doing, surely, and then moving
well,
on.
Well, you can also start with how artists are represented by others, which is where, when I did this one day on Liberty and Art at Tate, and again, to pick up on your point, Andrew, it's bloody difficult to reach out to political science on this kind of issue. And yet the important point to start was artists are always being included in somebody else's discourse on liberty. On liberty. How can they, as it were, respond by saying, hang on a minute, this is what I understand by liberty. And that's one way to play it, other than just saying let's come in at the same place or in the same theme, to say, well, how are artists understood? How is the work of the artist or the designer understood? How are we picked up by other people? And how can we then, as it were, respond to that cultural view of ourselves?
So then it's not just what we're doing, but why we're doing it.
I have a proposition, apart from stopping actually at 4 o'clock, but I felt for a while that what we need is a kind of institute for advanced studies, actually, almost. That we get together, we start asking up. Chris has also said this too. Where we actually look at, we're very keen on going down and on making sure we incentivise every aspect of research, but we could also be going up and actually thinking about these ideas and methodologies in really important ways around tables and with speakers in this at this university and with our partners in order to sort some of these, not sort the issues out, that's completely wrong, but in that spirit of critical inquiry so that we can actually do some of the work that enables that to happen. Because I think that would be something that would be a very, very interesting way for us to kind of move forward in that.
I think the important, I would, the thing that worries me most about, you know, I know you're talking shorthand at a table like this, but, you know, sort of putting onto the table, you know, this kind of concern, that kind of concern, which should be, you know, leading our research involvement or should be something that artists are involved in. They're all loaded, sort of, you know, often spoken of things that you've mentioned. They already have a baggage of kind of method with them, and I think that, you know, when there are these things set up institutionally as kind of clusters or an opportunity to get a grant to come on board with this kind of thinking. That you know, that there's a kind of slotting into a series of pre-discovery and methods and things that have already there, and there's not that. To go back to the latency that we found so important this morning, there's not that area opening up there for something that nobody's ever thought of, and or that you know that we know we feel is you know vaguely is something incorrect in a way, like there's no room for latent thinking and thinking about things that are not yet formed in society because everything's commodified and offered and this sort of thing. That we are in a sense commodifying research in a way by making these forming these areas and putting down our markers of where we belong and what we think about these things as in an institutionalized framework. Rather than in a more sort of pragmatic sort of daily ad hoc fashion, and what happens then I think is that we don't get the chance to we're not entering in with our partners in say political science or somewhere else at the right level, which I think is methodological. I mean, the reason we have such a lot of time trouble dealing with political scientists is that our methods are very different. Our you know the preconditions of our judgments are different from those of political science. An artist's attitude to a bunch of things from the past, pictures and sculptures and stuff, is not art history. It's a different, methodologically, it's very different from an art historian's practice. You know, and I think that that we too quickly accept that we can identify our own methods as artists as being those which can take up terms which have been created out of other methodologies. And I think that's one of the things that would worry me.
Well, it doesn't worry me at all, actually. In fact, the opposite worries me. If art becomes so hermetic, that its relevance is only within its own constituency.
No, it's not hermeticism, really, because I think artists, what I would suggest is not that art becomes hermetic, but that quite the opposite. It becomes open to method which is not traditionally been the method of the artist, but that it recognises it has to make a methodological leap before it can leap into a new knowledge, you know. It can't, that we've talked about what artists do, you know. Well, maybe they have to start doing a broader thing or doing something else or understanding things differently or creating a new method, new methodologies, being more open to other methodologies. I mean, I was talking at lunchtime about the change in, you were asking me about why all of a sudden archives are so important, and I was sort of speculating that, well, it's been this kind of philosophical change, you know, that's affected science a lot in the last 50 years, which changed them from, you know, taxonomy to radical cladistics that we're just getting into. Mm-hmm. You know, methodologically, we're just learning about radical cladistics, and that's making us interested in archives again. And I think, you know, I do think there is a hermeticism here, and I think we have to act against it. But I don't think we can act against it by giving ourselves other compartments in which to think and work. That's all I'm saying. And I've already said enough today, sorry.
No, I think again, Mika Ball has talked about that the disciplines are at an end, method doesn't matter. And I think, I mean, art school's the only place based on poetics. They're the only place where the educational curriculum is based on poetics.
Yeah.
It's based on the imaginative shaping of how we make knowledge and the world. And it has to have a specificity of method rather than a specificity of issue or content.
I would take completely opposite view of that.
Good.
I think without disciplines, I think we're dead in the water. I think we have
disciplines. There are disciplines which need poetic method. I mean, painting needs poetic method.
Yeah, let's distinguish between methods and disciplines. I think it's useful to draw a line between the two, really.
Okay, well, I would say that since the Romantic period, painting has had as its fundamental methodology has been poetic. I mean, that's why in the end, you know, Miro says things like, "I'm not a painter, I'm a poet," and why there's such a slippage between text and painting in the modern period.
I'm thinking this whole issue is the subject of a very good institute.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly as I said, and we need to get ourselves up to the level of having. I ran an institute of advanced studies at Harvard about a month ago, and it really impressed me for obvious reasons, money being one of them. But the other one was that a kind of open understanding that you can engage with social thought, so you have artists and social psychologists and scientists in the same room. And it feels to me that these questions of disciplines, that suddenly we have a huge amount to say and to offer on this, and that could be one very good offer that comes out of this, because we actually have a huge amount ready of resource to suggest to that, and I think we could do some really important research.
It's also
to address
important
the
to avoid kind of binaries as well.
Of course,
absolutely. It's important to recognise contradiction, to use
and
that where we can, and also to address those agendas but with a tactic.
Okay.
We could use Deleuze, for instance. We plead the poem.
I think we need to let that rest. Lydia, did you want to say
that? I was just kind of wondering, as a short question, how do you see curating with this?
Sorry, what's that?
How do you see curating with this?
Yeah. That, well, that could be also be come into that disciplinary discussion. I think we think that's the basis for an institute, because it's almost as if curatorial, the condition of curating starts to describe the art school at the moment.
I was thinking also about E-plus, I'm thinking about United Nations, the last manifesto, the failure,
Emily, and then
I keep thinking from today, from the morning, that we keep segregating mind and body. We keep having this conversation of the space of the studio as a virtual space, as a conceptual space, as a pragmatic space. And we keep talking about the identity that is structured within the studio, not only forming the self, but forming the object. More or less, our discourse has been leading us towards the question whether there is an object. An object to be taught rather than to be learned. Mm-hmm. Because by doing art, you are art making is learning. Mm-hmm. But teaching art, that is like a paradox. You cannot teach something that you haven't learned yet. You are rather there with your students, trying more or less to compare notes upon which island you landed when your boat got busted or whatever. I think that the whole process that we've been talking about in terms of methodology is the Western idea of that there is an object besides our own consciousness. Mm-hmm. So in this whole thing, whether it's the art market or the art school or someone else, really doesn't make a difference, you know. It's after all, it's about desire, as has been laid down on the table, and how this desire functions as a tool to form your identity as a structure. Mm-hmm. As I said in the beginning, I kind of understand the structure of the self as a structure, maintaining that that would be probable, that we have many selves available if the methodology of structuring a self changes. So more or less we are talking about the art school as a place where people who are willing to risk their identity socially, economically, psychologically are being tested for a future ground for society. So I've been thinking that we've been doing the same discussion, but we haven't dealt with the psychology of this.
No.
So we haven't been talking about risk at all.
I think there's that wonderful question. Susan should have been terribly simple. Yeah.
That in all the discussion, the thing that has been left out with the studio, which you have started this morning, this idea of bodega, is the communication between those who are here who are starting out and those who are here for a long time. And that cross current doesn't seem to be alive in this space at all.
Mm. Between the students, you mean?
Buried in their knowing or their not knowing, but not in what you learn from each other. It's a very American idea, I gather, but still, it's the idea you teach about self, the body not being there. I felt absolutely right. It's all here. It's not here. It's not this way.
I mean, I think that the idea of unlearning who it is we think we are in any form of context relates to this notion of design. And you know, there are models that exist. You know, T.J. Clark attempted many years ago to do something like that at the University of Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps aspects of the success of what he was able to achieve and thereafter the people who taught on that course has something to do with the context of size within a wider sort of university. But there are models. You know, if you have a look at Rehabilitation, the rector there is a political scientist, and there are some very interesting discourses and dialogue that exist and are taking place by and through very forward-thinking, intelligent individuals within their own disciplines who may not necessarily always share the same methodological approach to their particular area or field of inquiry, but understand the tenor of what's being looked at. And I think that you know, synthesis of feminisms the other day, but, and she raised precisely many of these issues about the relationship between culture and artistic and visual practice. And I think that she raised some really important questions around, you know, deeply philosophical questions about hierarchy, about canons, about, you know, the different kinds of philosophical discourse that actually, you know, I remember saying to Griselda Pollock actually 20 years ago, well, listen, you're going to need me when you're dead and gone. And in a way, it's a funny thing because it's quite right that we should be unlearning and unfolding. And, you know, we should be just a little bit afraid. And I don't think that that's a problem. I actually think that's exciting because if we remain a little bit afraid, that means we remain a little bit open. And, you know, I think that there are some very, very serious issues that we're kind of slightly skirting endlessly.
But I think maybe the option is that we probably do skirt them, and probably skirt them here, but in a sense maybe one of the functions of coming to the table is to suggest the spaces in which we might address them further. Because we have many circular discussions, but might we find ways in which we can kind of move those forward?
I mean, territory, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's a very frightening concept.
Yeah.
Everybody should be just a little bit scared. And, you know, in an open and that is the case. And you can't take what's happening economically, globally, out of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
I love your analogy of the boat, you know, crashing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that there's something really quite beautiful.
Mm.
You know, because you have to unpick the very vessel that takes you somewhere, and I think that's necessary.
Mm.
I don't think that for me there's never one solution, and I don't feel that there has to be rifles just because there's 34,000 Africans.
Mm.
I find that really terrifying.
Yeah.
And
it was. Yeah.
I
they won't be schools of thought.
I emphasise what you said. I think it's really important. I want to protect what I hate, and I want to
protect
bring in something fresh. I want what I protect to stop trying to kill me all the time. You know, in other words, I don't want to see death. I want to see growth,
mm-hmm.
And I don't see that people have to. I don't see why the difference. Methodologies can't find a way of discourse that allows something much more, you know, incredible to happen through synthesis and change. You know, I don't have effing answers to anything, you know, but I'm prepared to listen.
Got the questions.
I've got too many questions. That's not bad. You know, because when I was a student, I remember thinking, oh shit, you know, because I came from a science background, and I thought, oh, they all know art history, and all in canteen, and they're all talking about art history, and I don't really know very much at all. And I went over to him, and I said, you know, am I on the wrong course? Should I leave? Should I do something else? And she was fantastic. She said, no, it just means you've got a lot less to unlearn and unpick than the other people around you. And I think that was probably one of the most wonderful things that anybody, the most wonderful gifts that anybody's ever given me. You know, and I think that we forget, you know, the very things that make us move forward. You know. Sorry, it sounds like a very romantic.
I think we should probably stop there. I should thank everybody actually.
It's a bit more depressing.
Can I just ask a question to finish? I've been blogging away and trying desperately to capture little bits of what's been said. And we've got this website that's our experiment. And all day I've been watching people scribbling notes in their books, like I do. Not everybody, a lot of people. And I want those notebooks. So, you know, not wishing to come and rifle your bags, If you get a chance to look at the website and enter just some thoughts, because we don't want this event to disappear with us. We're just walking in different directions. It's important that we capture aspects of it, our own thoughts, our own thinking, and put them in the repository of the website so that we can continue to talk to each other and share our thinking and learn. I mean, it's great to listen, but so much information has been said today. I can't keep track of it all. I've been trying, but I know that if I can return to it and read it when I'm calm and able to think, I will be able to think more and I'll be able to respond to it. So if you haven't logged into the website and you would like to, I will sit here and I will do it for you. I'll sit next to you and I'll guide you through it. But please use that space to continue this conversation.
Please have a cup of tea or coffee. We're going to have a break. We're going to have a reception at 6:30, in which there'll be no more questions. But really a space for people who might have wanted to think, oh, I'd like to talk to so-and-so today, have a drink, have some food, have some just social exchange. So we're going to start with that at 6:30, and we'd really like to welcome everybody to come to that. Tomorrow we're going to have two tables, and then we're going to do a little kind of plenary roundup for the World Cafe, and then we'll just try and get as much as we can on the website as well. So, thank you.
Dorno's, you know, it's a lot of people get to Dorno's, right? It's, you know, the main part of it.
70 years ago on the internet, so not decided to download this by developers of music. So,
yes.
So I write things like techno.
Where the intestine,
you know, there's JD who does cinema, his film studies, you know, who trained at the School of the Arts at New York University, like me. I did my PhD in performance studies in New York, and he was on the same fucking landing, only down in cinema studies. And then there's Daniel King, who's at NYU as well, and he does American literature and poetry. You know, that people do visual, we've got a Center for Visual Fields, that's to call it visual culture, and they call it visual fields, and it's just great. It's a really good, it's a better intellectual community for me than being in a drama department, you know. Even though I'm kind of, I'm more or less like Claire. I've got exactly almost carbon copy, like same background. I was a performer, but was great and wrote a lot as well and talked a lot. And so she, you know, I was in the same company as her. Early, I was the generation behind her. So when they collapsed, in fact, Pete Brooks, who she worked with, went on and started another company, and I was in the second tier. So, you know, it's interesting. She's this funny hybrid, and I'm this funny hybrid, and it's hard finding your home.
Yeah.
You know, I go the last two summers I've been teaching at the School of the Art Institute in Chicago, and I walk into the School of the Art Institute in Chicago, and I feel more at home than I ever do in a fucking university institution. Even if it's only because the way I look, but that's a lot. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's a lot to feel like a prince on stage around the table, whereas I walk in here and I think, oh, this context, yes, I feel at home. So I'm surrounded by sort of artistic people. Maybe it's that, you know, artistic people. I don't know, with friends as well, I think. But artistic contexts are different to universities, but then there's just a weird hybrid here, isn't it? Because it calls itself the University of the Arts. So it's clearly confused.
Well, I, to be honest, I just spent, I had a 2-hour meeting this morning, which I didn't think was going to be that long, meeting at the same amount, and almost an hour of that meeting is explaining the structure of the colleges, the university, the research centres, and what it means to apply for PhD. Do they apply for college? Do they apply for a research centre? How does it work? Do you compete against each other? And I'm just going, this is far, far too
complicated.
They want that to rationalise it, but I thought there was going to be more fun.
What?
I thought there was going to be more interesting stuff going on.
Yeah. How long have you been in that? So they're not. Is it practice versus PhD?
Which could be really good. They're just not.
They're not Christian gypsy at all. They need.